You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera and everything in between, if you have a piece of hunting gear or a piece of hunting equipment that needs a battery, Interstate Batteries has got you covered. You can go to a local retail store, or you can go visit online at interstatebatteries.com. They have thousands of local retail shops all over the U.S., so you can go there as well. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. This last week, I had the opportunity to be on a pretty cool platform for the outdoor industry.
Yep.
I've got Colby Moorhead, the bear tech, here with me. We're going to give kind of a little preamble to the podcast, but last week, well, it was actually, we recorded it back in July.
Colby. Yeah, we've been waiting on this.
Yeah, but it just came out this week, which August 26th, I think, is when it came out. But I was on the Meat Eater podcast with Steve Rinella, which was cool. I really follow everything that Steve does, follow his Netflix series, Meat Eater, follow the podcast, follow what they're doing on social media. So this was a big deal, personally a big deal for me to be on the podcast. It was really a fun experience.
Yeah.
So you can check out that, the podcast. Tell them what the podcast is called, Colby.
All for a Flashy Mule.
All for a Flashy Mule. I think it was episode 183. And I don't know if a lot of people would know this. I didn't know it until I kind of did some research. But on iTunes, the Meat Eater podcast, at the time I looked, was the 67th most listened to podcast in the world on iTunes.
Wow.
I mean, that's for a hunting podcast to be that popular. It's interesting. I mean, yeah. Everybody in the outdoor industry should, I think, could key in on something like that to say what's happening here that's making these people, you know, draw into this. And, you know, it's just interesting. So you can check out some of his stuff. I mean, I don't need to do a infomercial for Steve Rinella.
Yeah.
But it is interesting stuff, some of it. But this podcast, the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast, my boys last night, I told them about Rinella's podcast being in the top 100.
Yeah.
And they said, "Dad, is yours in the top 200? And I said, "No."
Yeah.
And they said, "Is it in the top 500 in the world?" I mean, they were just certain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "No." And they were like, "No, Dad, your podcast has got to be in the top 500 in the world." I mean, they were just like floored that.
Yeah.
And I said, "No, boys, it's not." But the Shepherd was like, "But it's getting there. It's getting there." He was like really loyal to the call, to the cause here. But what we're going to talk about on this podcast, I think the conversation that we had about the actual fundamental aspects of baiting bear, like how to, that we nerd out, Colby, about baiting bears with two of the best guys that I know in Arkansas. Not to say there's not more, but these two guys that I had on here, Jason Lyles and my longtime friend Ryan Greb, good bear hunters, been baiting bears serious for a lot of years. They both have a lot of good insight, and so this podcast probably has as much tactical information about what to bait with, when to bait with, baiting sequence, where to set up a bait site. Yeah, we covered a ton of stuff. But why I'm doing this preamble like this, which is a little bit longer form than we usually do, is we didn't get into at all, you know, like the foundational aspects that I think we've all got to have on the tip of our tongue in 2019 as we're trying to not defend. I don't want to be on the defensive, but we're trying to educate ourselves on why we do what we do. I mean, this hunting lifestyle that we live, it has to be fueled by an understanding that we can articulate of why we do what we do. And I think a lot of guys would perceive baiting bears simply as just an effective way to hunt. It's like, this is an easy way to hunt. And obviously with baiting bears, there's a ton of misperceptions. You know, charismatic megafauna, putting out food and bait for charismatic megafauna, people could look down upon that. But what I want to say is that, and this is what I said to Ranella, and part of the reason it's connected to this is we talked a lot about baiting bears and using hounds on the Meat Eater podcast.
Yeah.
And so the foundational aspect of baiting bears is that anywhere it's legal to bait bears, that is a core management tool for the game agencies that have the data, that have the science, that know the habitat, that know how many bears there are, that know how much their bear population is growing every year, and they know how many bears need to be taken out every year. They have this data, and where baiting is legal, it is a management tool used for these organizations to achieve their management goals for the betterment of that bear population.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's a fundamental aspect. So it's not just like, well, they have lenient game laws in that state, and so they allow baiting. No, that's stupid.
Mm.
That's not the case. In the East, particularly, and in Canada, and in the places where you can bait bears, it is other methods don't work.
Yeah.
This prime example is Arkansas. Our bear season was reinstated in 1980 after like a 70-year gap, or well, from 1927 to 1980. And for 21 years, from 1980 to 2001, all you could do in Arkansas was basically spot and stalk hunting bears. And yeah, every year they killed less than 50 bears. In 2001, finally the science, the data, the expansion of the bears, they were like, we got to take more bears out of the population. They said, we're going to do that with baiting on private land. Baiting is highly selective. Perhaps hound hunting and hunting over bait would be the most selective way to hunt bears. Like you're getting pictures of this animal, and we're just talking about baiting on this podcast. So you're getting pictures of these animals. You know what your target animals are. Bear comes in close range. He's standing there for a long period of time. You're able to evaluate that bear's age, the bear's sex, the bear's size, all this stuff. You're able to evaluate whether it's a sow that has cubs because you're watching, you're looking, you're evaluating her. And so it's a highly selective way to hunt. And that's the way people have to view it. Number one, it's not a management tool. I'm pounding it into the ground here.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is that hunting over bait is one of the hardest ways that I hunt. I spend more time and energy baiting bears than almost I do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ton of work. So this idea that hunting over bait is easy is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous and should be expelled from people's minds that hunting over bait is just the easy man's or the lazy man's way to hunt. Just not true. Mm-hmm. Anybody that says that has never done it. I challenge. Now, granted, people may have gone on outfitted hunts over bait and come back and go, well, that was easy. Well, yeah, it was easy. It was an outfitted hunt.
Yeah.
Somebody that has killed bear over bait that has done it themselves will never say that it was easy. Now, the hunting, I mean, yeah, you might have a bear come in the first day and you may kill it, but there was a host of work behind that.
Yeah.
So those are the things that I want to say as we come into this, because we're going to nerd out for an hour and 15 minutes about the tactics that we're using for baiting bears. Super good stuff. But
yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
I like it.
Am I pounding too hard into the choir?
I don't think so. I mean, even when I went on my outfitted hunt, I killed early, and so I went out with the outfitter just to see what it was like, and it was a lot of work. I came back drenched in sweat.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah.
Even in my limited, you know, exposure to it.
Yeah. Yep. Well, hey, you're going to enjoy this podcast with Ryan Grab, Jason Lyles, and myself, and That's it. Before we get into the podcast, I want to bring your attention to our friends at Northwoods Bear Products. In this podcast, you're going to hear us talk about the way that we use commercial scents. And you're going to hear these guys talk about their preferences and what they're doing. Do us a favor. Go to Northwoods Bear Products Instagram page. Give them a like and a look on Instagram. All right. It is time for bear hunting. There's still time to get commercial scents if you're baiting bears and it's legal in your state. Like we said last week, some places you can't bait, but you can use scent. So check your regulations and check out Northwoods. They've got all kind of scent attractants, and these are the things that we're using. And NorthwoodsBearProducts.net. It's August 26th, and in 2 days here in Arkansas, we can start baiting bears. In Arkansas, we can bait bears 30 days before the opening of the bear season. Bear season opens on September 28th, fourth Saturday in September. Usually, the last 2 years, the fourth Saturday in September has been in the early 20s of September, which is way better.
Way better.
Way better than late September. It's like people that wouldn't know bear hunting, or at least around here know bear hunting, would know that the difference between September 22nd and September 28th is pretty massive.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So let me introduce who we've got here. We're at the global headquarters. And the air conditioner works today. And I've got Ryan Flintface Grib here. Ryan's been on the podcast several times. Ryan's a good friend of mine. We've hunted quite a few places together. And Ryan is a decorated Arkansas bear hunter. Been bear hunting Arkansas since you were two.
That's right.
No, Ryan's a real good bear hunter. And I've got Jason Lyles. Jason's new to the podcast, but I've known you. I feel like I've known you for many years, but more like internet buddies.
Yeah, I mean, about the past 3 years, probably.
Yeah, probably so. And Jason's hooking me up with in the squirrel dog world. Right?
Oh, is that right?
No doubt.
Yep.
He's a good tree dog man, coon dog, squirrel dog.
Yeah.
And the pup we got is a. Your Wiley Mountain Cur dog is a grandsire.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
The pup goes back to a man named Todd Coles. Goes back to some of his bloodline. Yeah. And then the dam to your pup is out of my Mountain Cur Wiley.
That's right.
And another female that I used to own that my buddy Donnie Presser owns.
Yep. Right on.
Yep.
Yeah, so Jason's helping us with the squirrel dog world, in the squirrel dog world. But Jason is also a decorated Arkansas bear hunter. You know, the bear world in Arkansas really seems to be pretty small. It's growing. When I say small, like in Arkansas, we're killing less than 500 bears a year. Mm-hmm. So the northern zone in Arkansas, there's a I believe now it's a 300 bear quota. Can't remember. They raised it 50 bears.
Again.
They raised it this year, 50, oh, really? 50 bears.
I didn't see that.
That's my understanding. Yeah. And then the other zone, there's no quota, but typically they're killing less than 150 bears a year. So really not a lot of animals. And so we've been baiting bears in Arkansas since 2001. Okay. I've made this claim on the podcast, but I've never made it in front of two decorated Arkansas bear hunters. I claim to be the first Arkansas bow hunter to legally kill a bear over bait as soon as it was legal in Arkansas in 2001. Because at the crack of dawn, at the crack of dawn on October the 1st, 2001, my dad was wearing his white t-shirt because he still hadn't put on his camo. He had just climbed up the tree. He was going to video for me. I was in the tree. He was like 8 feet off the ground. Like, for whatever reason, closer to the barrel than me. I don't know why we decided that. He was going to film this bear hunt. And he's just, like, glowing like a light in this tree. And I see this bear coming up the ridge. And it was the first bear I'd ever seen in a hunting situation. You know, I'd seen bears, like, cross the road and stuff.
Right.
And, man, it was a fascinating scene to me to look off down this ridge. And it was still twilighty enough that you really couldn't see the bear's legs move. It just looked like it was just floating. You know, like this black blob just floating. And, I mean, it just came right in. I didn't have my release on. put my release on. The bear walks right in. Dad, I think it's the camera's still on the ground, like on a rope, you know, and poof, shoot this bear at 20 yards. Bear runs off and gives the most dramatic death moan that a bear has ever made in all of history, I'm quite certain.
And you were hooked after that.
I was. And me and my dad, our jaws dropped. I mean, we were just like, holy cow. We didn't even know they death moaned. But, you know, that story, I have told it several times. I walked up to that animal. I was 21 years old in 2001. I walked up to that animal, and I knew nothing about it. That was the dominant feature of the hunt for me, was I was fascinated by this incredible, beautiful, magnificent animal, and I knew nothing about it. And that's kind of what set me into the bear world. But to go back to my claim, and I'm going to – can either of you dispute this? Did you kill a bear before then?
Well, what you didn't know is I was just down the ridge, and I'd passed that bear 10 minutes before it got to you.
Well, then you were hunting on National Forest, and that was illegal. Maybe so. Now, so did you kill a bear in 2001?
No, I did not hunt over a bait in 2001.
Yeah, you're just a rookie.
Yeah.
Just a rookie.
2002, though.
2002.
Yeah.
Now, when did you first start hunting?
2003 was the first year that I tried baiting bears, and it was late. I started like October. And
You didn't get started until season got going.
Right. It was muzzleloader season. I was like, I'm going to give this a try. Didn't work out at all that year.
Yeah,
2004 was the first year I actually put some effort into it. Started baiting 30 days before season, and opening morning, got him.
Nice.
Big one.
So my claim still stands. My claim.
You win.
Okay. No. What I want to talk about on this podcast, though, is I want to go from zero to informed for people that were listening about how to bait bears, because it would seem that it would just be easy. People that have never baited bears, even hunters, would think baiting bears would be relatively easy. But what we've found and what I've learned, and I've learned a ton from Ryan Greb, mm-hmm. I really have. What I've learned is that you got to do a whole lot of stuff right in order to be successful year in and year out on older mature males, big bears.
A lot of people can go out and have a crack, pretty good opportunity at a mm-hmm. subordinate bear, but you know, season hunters, us guys wanting to chase the more mature bear, whole different animal.
You got to do a ton. The way I'd say it is you got to do a ton of stuff right.
Right.
And there's a lot of, it's not just one thing. It's a lot of things. And so hopefully in our conversation today, we can just cover, I want to hear from both of you guys about kind of just your sequence of baiting. And let me tell you the questions that we're going to answer. And these are the questions that I get all the time. Is what do you bait with? I'm going to go through the questions, and y'all can help me remember what the questions are.
Sure.
What do you bait with? What's the best bear bait? That's a question. The other question is, how much do you feed? The other question is, when do you feed? Because there's a lot of options. I mean, there's some places where you can bait bears year-round. Mm-hmm. There's some places where you can bait bears just a week before the season starts. We're working with a 30-day time period, which is actually pretty good.
Yes.
There's some places, I'm pretty sure there's some places where you can't start baiting until the season actually opens. I mean, so you put out bait and then you can't even start before the season opens.
Really?
And so what to bait with, how much to bait with, when to bait with, and the question that most people don't ask that they should be asking is where do you bait? Like, because in a landscape, if you were just looking at the landscape of Arkansas, or a landscape of any place, there are going to be locations, even on a micro scale to a macro scale, that are going to be way better for attracting bears in the daylight. Because that's the thing. You could put a bear bait out in the middle of an open pasture, and bears would probably go there during the night and not have any trouble. Yeah. But you're probably not going to kill a good bear out in the middle of a pasture on open. I mean, those bears want to be in secluded places. They want to be in places away from human contact and activity.
Shaded.
They want to be places that are shaded, places where they feel secure. And you want to, you so even the way I say it is, even on a 40-acre property that maybe is all 100% wooded, mm-hmm. like you would think, well, all this is the same. There's one place on that property that's the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, for killing yep. bears, whether it would be higher on it. So I don't want to get too deep into it, but those are the four questions we're going to answer.
Okay.
So let me, Jason, what do you like to bait with?
What I usually use is I'll do a lot of donuts, pastries, bacon, just pretty much the basic type stuff that guys in our area.
When you say bacon, do you mean bacon grease?
No, like bacon ends.
Okay. Do you actually? Okay.
Yeah.
Not cooked bacon.
Raw bacon, cooked bacon, doesn't matter. Okay. I really like anything fatty, pork, beef,
yeah.
you know, stuff like that. Mostly going to be pastries. I pop popcorn, which is a little bit of work doing that, yeah. but they really eat that popcorn, and it, you know, it's small pieces, and it really, they really have to work the bait and stay there to eat all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Corn. I do just a lot of corn.
Deer corn like you'd buy.
Straight up deer corn, but I've kind of come up with a secret to that is I make these barrels. I've got these barrels. They're smaller, about 25, 30-gallon barrels,
mm-hmm.
and they're tethered out with a chain or a cable, and they're usually a snap-top lid so you can get them open easy.
Yep.
I drill three holes in one side that are about an inch max, and I fill that barrel with the corn, and I use maple syrup, and I stir that in.
Okay.
They roll that thing and yeah. just roll that corn out, and they just take hours to get that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And the thing about that I really like doing that is because when they empty that big barrel, they've got something else to sit there and work that bait and stay there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just keep coming for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And another thing I'll use sometimes is you always hear a lot of people using dog food and such.
Yep.
And I've not had much luck with dog food. The dog food I do have luck with is something that's more corn-based. Like mm-hmm. a lot of times you go down the co-op and you get, oh, there's some discard bags of dog food. I've seen where the bears will roll that barrel and roll that dog food out just to get the other stuff and leave that dog food.
Yep.
But mm-hmm. there's certain brands of dog food even just that are more basic, less meat-based probably,
mm.
more just
like
corn.
The cheaper stuff.
The dirt cheap. Yeah. Like if you go to
really, have you had yeah. that experience,
yes.
too?
Yeah.
The cheaper stuff is yeah. better for bears? Yeah.
The stuff that has mostly corn for filler,
yeah,
those bears like that better. You mix that with syrup, and it's just like they're just crazy over it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just go nuts.
So let me ask you a couple of questions. You said something there that somebody might not understand in terms of the philosophy behind what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first thing that a bear is going to go to, well, first of all, a bear will love anything that'll make a human fat. That's the way I like to say
yep.
it.
Yep.
I mean, whether it's donuts, pastries, bread, sweets, sugary stuff,
yep.
candy. I mean, they don't really like hard candy, but like
gummy
candies
yeah.
or,
yeah.
you know, anything that's really sugary, really fatty, lots of carbohydrates,
mm-hmm.
they're going to eat that. So let's say you've got a barrel and you've got donuts, you've got white bread, you've got some wheat bread. I've found that bears just eat any kind of bread. I'll mm-hmm. get this yep. bread from a thrift yep. store
right.
and unshuck it. We call it shucking bread, but, you know, take it out of the package, and, man, they'll eat it like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I pour a lot of grease on there.
Mm-hmm.
But so they'll eat that down maybe. And if you have multiple bears coming in, they'll eat that quick.
Fast, yes.
So your corn roller barrel gives them something else to eat that's harder to access, that takes longer to eat.
Yes.
To keep them coming in.
Yep. It's a strategic piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Basically at my bait sites.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell me about making your popcorn with you told me you sprinkle mm-hmm. in some other stuff.
Yeah, so what I'll do is you just take a regular propane cooker, just like a fish fryer, mm-hmm. and I'll have a steel pot. And, you know, as a bear baiter, you always gather in, like, old fryer oil, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use new cooking oil as well. It doesn't matter. But I'll set aside 5 gallons of fryer oil just for popping the popcorn. And I usually get that, you know, you got to have that flame pretty hot for popping popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
I'll fill the bottom of that pan with probably a half inch oil, and I'll mix in sugar in that oil. And okay. then I'll fill it in with a couple cups of popcorn seed. And just as long as that popcorn seed is covered with that oil, put the lid on and just pop that. You know, you don't want to burn it, but I'll just keep popping those kettles of popcorn and dumping them into a 55-gallon drum. Well, as I get the next one going, I'll sprinkle like some cherry Kool-Aid powder or little, you get the bags of the small marshmallows, sprinkle some in there and stir that up, and that just melts together. It doesn't make a big gummy ball, but it's kind of sticky.
Okay. While the popcorn's hot,
while
so
the
it's melting.
Hot, right, it'll melt the marshmallows down.
You've just
and
said
that Kool-Aid.
You said a couple of things that are important. Number one was fryer grease,
yes.
Which I know all three of us.
Yep.
Fryer grease is a major component of what we're doing.
The key calling lure to your bait, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fryer grease. Used fryer grease, which is accessible once you find a source.
Can be tough to get.
It can be tough to get, but every restaurant has gobs of used, nasty fryer grease. Mm-hmm. And some people are selling it for people making... using it for biofuel,
recycling
it and stuff. Right. But most of the time you can get it if you just go in and like, hey, and offer to pay for it. That's the way I've had luck. Is hey, I'll pay you $10 if you let me get some fryer oil or something. And that's essential to any bait, I feel like, because it gets on their pads. They're making trails. It's not water soluble. It won't evaporate. I mean, you can sometimes go back to these bait sites a year later and like, not smell it, but
still have the soaked dark earth there where that oil's been, or the trees. You know, if you have a long standing bait site, all those trees are just dark black.
Yeah.
Also on the underbrush. Additives to put to it, which we know is very important that I.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can't talk about what. Tell them what you use, Ryan.
As in the additive?
Yeah, I mean the specific
Gold Rush.
Yeah, Northwoods Gold Rush.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah.
And it's have you used that, Jason?
Yeah, it's all I use.
Really, Northwoods Gold Rush. Yep. It's killer. Describe it, Ryan.
Just a concentrated butterscotch, and it takes maybe an ounce, 2 ounces per, 5 gallon bucket, and it smells like pure candy, and
it does.
So it takes this. It takes your fryer grease, which fryer grease has an odor, but it's not like a super strong odor, and it makes your fryer grease have a super strong odor.
Oh, yeah.
And they carry it with them everywhere they go.
Yep. And use it in liberal amounts. Sling it, like I say, pour it around your bait sites. Let the bears roll in it, step in it, and just sling it way up in tree trunks and the foliage. And
Absolutely. So most of these fryer grease additives, and there's multiple companies that make them, but we're using the Gold Rush, and it comes in an 8-ounce bottle. It's like $36. Mm-hmm. But that 8-ounce bottle will treat 40 gallons of grease.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, I like to mix it hot.
Yeah.
I like to mix it a little hotter than what they say. So, I'll probably get 20 gallons of grease, but still, that's quite a bit
of grease.
That's a lot of grease. Yeah. So, fryer grease. The other thing that you said was the powder. Sugary additives.
Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff.
Good stuff. Yep.
Because those Kool-Aid powder bags do produce a lot of scent, and you can mix those in, and just anything that is going to cause more scent to be there.
Absolutely.
And we can talk about commercial scents too later, because I use a lot of. I mean, aside from Gold Rush, there's lots of other just spray products and powder products.
Some of these, mom and pop stores that sell like the Al-A-Date stuff. The big bulk bags of Gatorade, and different flavors. I found that's worked.
The powder.
Really, the powder. Just mix it like you would the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Baiting here in Arkansas, you got to be kind of resourceful. It's, not a lot of people doing it, but there's enough people doing it. It can make it a lot of competition for getting your bait.
Yeah.
And so last year, I came across a lot of good bait. You probably remember seeing those pallets of stuff I got on the trailer. There was a pallet of raspberry jelly buckets bulk on that, and that worked really well. Anything berries, blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, they loved that.
So you said cheap dog food, corn, pastries, bread, popcorn with marshmallows and Kool-Aid. Let's just leave that right there.
Okay,
Ryan. Pretend like he hadn't even talked. No, I'm being serious. Like, I want to hear from zero your baiting strategy.
My hookup has been, and it has been for a long time, has been a bakery that makes lots and lots of pastries and has lots of excess every day. So for me,
how is that a good business model for them?
I don't know. I've asked them that.
He gets tons of donuts. Yeah. Now I'm always like, man, they should make less if they want to make more money.
Well, they say, you know, before it's baked, there's actually not that much material there.
Oh, like, I see.
You got a point. But no, you know, I usually can get 250, 300 pounds of pastries every day.
Wow. Are you going to share some of that this year?
I've got people knocking my door down
all
the time.
You're
going
to share it with me, though, right?
Right.
Because I'm your friend.
Yeah, I brought you one donut. It's in the truck.
He took a bite out of it.
Yeah. But that's, you know, usually my mainstay. But, you know, like you other guys, we, you know, whole corn. I usually grease it down is what I do with the, you know, the Gold Rush in it. And
like how much grease? Let's say you got a 55-gallon drum full of corn will hold 300 pounds of shell corn.
Yeah.
So give somebody an example of how much grease you would pour on that.
I've never filled one hole. I've got some roller barrels, you know, and may put, you know, half a 5-gallon bucket, 2.5 gallons on it, really soak it down good. I've got a metal pipe feeder that's been there, practically growed into the tree where I changed it 15 years ago, and fill it up. You know, and every once in a while, I try to stay away from the meat products now. Used to, you know, I do a lot of beaver trapping, and used to do it for the county down there. But I'd save beaver carcasses. But you have to have a hot bait. Lots of bears coming in.
Yep.
Seems like the bears in this area want fresh meat.
Absolutely.
If it starts to get least what rancid. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a mess on your hands.
And see, that would be different than Canada.
Yeah.
Canada correct. And some of these northern places, the nastier the beaver, the better.
Yeah, and that's strange. I don't know if it's just because maybe it's a little more cooler up there, not as humid or something, but down here.
I think it's just resource availability. I mean, in the far north, there is less stuff for them to eat up there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're just taking advantage of any protein they can get.
Right.
Down here, these bears have a lot of options.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think it's just that.
Just this year, you know, every strain of oak tree is loaded.
Mm-hmm.
There's walking sticks, katydids, tons of pokeberries. You know, persimmon trees are loaded.
Yep. Blueberries did good. Blackberries did good.
Yes.
Lots of blackberries.
So, you know, they've got more of a smorgasbord down here, maybe compared to the
in time
north.
Frame, these bears down here are staying awake for 10 months a year, nine to 10 months a year.
Yeah.
Northern bears are staying awake maybe 6 to 7 months a year.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, back to what I was saying, my main core of my baits is pastries.
Yeah.
So,
any other little tidbit, secret things you do that you've never told me about?
Not really. You know,
you've been holding out on me. I can see it in your eyes.
No, I try to keep as much there as possible. You know, I don't know if that's something y'all want to touch on right now, but, you know, I have.
That'll be the next thing is how much. But now, you did use some Asian food that you were getting there for a while, didn't you?
Yeah.
Or it didn't work very good?
Yeah, friends actually worked for a guy that has a Chinese restaurant down there in the town where I'm from. And, boy, every night when they'd empty buffet, there'd be 5-gallon bucket or more of Chinese food. I'm like, man, that bears ought to tear that up.
Fried rice.
Yeah. I poured it out, and you come back, it has not been touched. They will, where I'm at, they will not touch anything spicy.
Right.
It's strange.
Wow.
So I actually had to shovel it up back in some
bags. I forgot the story. I was thinking that it was that it worked.
Oh, no. No.
It didn't work.
Not at
Jason,
all.
Jason, have you ever put out something that did not work?
Oh, absolutely.
What?
One year, I got they use it as filler for cattle feed. They'll take cereal, and you'd think bears, they love Lucky Charms and, you know, Captain Crunch and stuff. But they pulverize that cereal into like a powder, almost like rice bran.
Mm.
And I used that and mixed it in my roller barrels with corn and syrup and stuff, and I had to dump it out. They
even with the corn?
They would not touch that barrel with that. It immediately went from that roller barrel being destroyed to the point where they had it caved in on the side they were rolling it so hard to the week I put that out,
just quit it.
Quit it. Quit that particular barrel and just kept emptying the 55-gallon drum nonstop.
Okay, here's my story.
Yeah.
One time I thought, well, bears leave our baits to go to mass crop, right? Okay. Nuts.
Yeah.
So I brought home like 200 pounds of almonds.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they were seasoned. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the mistake, salted.
Yeah.
And I never ate one, so it may have even had some of that smoked, like the smoked almond.
The liquid smoke.
Yeah.
Artificial. Right.
Man, I put those out and I was like, bears are going to love this stuff. They would walk circles around it, you know, to get to bait. I mean, they didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Wow. So you find stuff like that when you're baiting bears. And I think regionally that's going to be the case.
It is. Say as, you know, me and Carney got them big old pallets of Skittles last year.
Yes.
I dumped out 3 or 4 or 5 gallon buckets of Skittles. Did not touch a single one. Carney dumps them out up here where he's from. Can't find a single one left.
Same thing here.
Is that right?
Yeah, you used Skittles last year. Remember, I tried to give you
a
few cases of them. They were a pain to unpack.
Yeah.
Because they're in little packages.
Melted a lot, too.
Yes, yeah. The bears at my bait did like them. A few miles up the road at my buddy's bait, wouldn't touch them. Hmm. And I'm sure some of the same bears were probably visiting both those bait sites.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So I think the point is that before you commit your life to one single bait, you better make sure that it works.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think bears get conditioned to stuff over the years.
Absolutely.
I think that, like, maybe you could go back and put out Skittles this year, or maybe if you'd have, this is just theory, but sprinkle them in a little bit here and there rather than all at once. Like, maybe they would gradually move toward. I know it's like that when guys feed rice bran with deer. Mm-hmm. You know, we can bait deer here in Arkansas. Some people put out rice bran. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the deer won't eat rice bran for weeks.
Right.
And then
they
finally,
don't know what it is.
Then finally one of them starts eating it, and they're like, oh, this is basically corn.
Yeah.
You know? But so before you just commit to anything, you got to know that they'll eat it. But the one thing that they will not turn down is breaded pastry stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that would be like the core of probably most of what we're doing. And popcorn-related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen them be finicky with popcorn at times, but most of the time they're going to hammer the popcorn.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, let me talk about what I do with my baits. Bread and donuts, number one, I'm going to have one full barrel, like packed, like I'll jump in the barrel, stomping it down of bread, donuts, pastries of any kind that I can get. As I'm putting it in, I'm putting in oil on top of it. Yep. It layers, you know. I'll put in like 10 inches of bread, pour oil, 10 more inches of bread, pour oil. You know, just kind of make sure it gets evenly distributed. I'll have a roller barrel. Just last year, I started using a roller barrel, just like, and Ryan does that. And that was major. And I'll put a full 300 pounds of corn in there. And I've got about six, probably 2-inch holes at the bottom of my roller barrel with a 55-gallon
just
drum.
Above the rim of the bottom.
Yep.
Okay.
Just at the very bottom, low as I can get those holes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's what I did. And I put an eye bolt in the barrel
and
put about an 18-inch chain on a tree. So, I mean, they can pretty much, they really can't, it may be a 2-foot chain, but, I mean, they really can't just, like, roll it all around, but they can knock it around, and they do. And then the last several years, I've gotten bear bait from commercial bear bait distributors up north. Lucky 7 is where we got our stuff last year.
I ate some of that.
Yeah, you ate some of it? You like it?
He had me backpack some into what he called a walk-in bait one time, and I ate probably 20 pounds of licorice behind your back.
Yeah.
He didn't know it.
That's why you didn't have near the load when we got back in there.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, where's all this bait?
Where'd it go? I thought you were loaded up more.
Yep.
Some of that stuff's good.
It
now,
was.
So what I've used when I've done that, and I'm not doing it this year, is we would have Pop-Tarts. We would have like the tops of Oreo cookies. Mm-hmm. So I just envision, or you guys would do it, but I'm describing this to people that wouldn't. You know, envision Oreo cookies without the filling, just little chocolate
wafers, discs,
or vanilla ones. And then some years we've had ice cream cones, just crunched up in a big, huge tote that probably weighs 800 pounds.
Yeah, like sugar
cones. So Pop-Tarts, cookies, Yeah, sugar, ice cream sugar cones. Mm-hmm. We'll have big buckets of frosting, yep, which work great.
Oh, yeah.
They have a couple years ago, well, last year, I got boxes of gummies, sour gummies. Mm. I thought they would have a hard time with the sour gummies, and I think they did at first. The first time I baited, I just poured out a whole, like, 40-pound box of sour gummies on top of this barrel, and they didn't hardly mess with it. And I was like, doggone, they're not going to eat these things, and I'm going to have all this bait. But soon enough, they started eating it,
right,
and they ate it all.
Yeah.
And then, man, we've had a lot of different stuff. But the frostings and those, kettle corn,
mm-hmm,
you know, a lot of these commercial bait distributors, you can buy kettle corn, which is popcorn that's got sugar and,
yep,
toffee and stuff mixed, oh, yeah, in with it, kind of like what you're doing.
Yep.
And then the last thing I used was trail mix, which that's what a lot of the Canadian guys and stuff up north use is trail mix, which that would be like pretzels, yeah, M&Ms, and nuts, mm-hmm, varieties of nuts. And the bears ate it good. They ate it good. So typically I would have two full barrels on a really good bait that I knew a lot of bears were coming into, two full barrels of, you know, ice cream cones or whatever, you know, kind of like my carbohydrate barrels and then a corn,
yeah,
barrel. And then I would spray the heck out of it with a scent product.
Right.
Just whatever. People go nuts over, like, the different types of scent, you know, like what's the best, yeah, scent to attract a bear. I don't think there is one. I think they, it's just a potent, loud.
Right.
You know, Ryan uses the word, it's loud, mm-hmm, you know, just a loud scent. But, okay, that's good for that discussion. We'll just leave that there. Second thing, how much do you bait? So, ready, go.
Typically what I do is I'll have the roller barrel. It's about 30-gallon barrel. I'll put, a couple bags of corn in that probably, or I might mix it with a bag of corn and a bag of dog food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the way I make that roller barrel, I make it those holes small enough, they really have to work to get that amount of feed out. But always a 55-gallon drum, as full as I can get it. Sometimes last year I did two 55-gallon drums and a roller.
Right.
Yeah, and this is an established bait site, too.
Very established.
So established bait site,
yep,
you've been baiting the same place for 15 years.
That particular bait is Old Faithful in 15 years. And the amount of bears and the amount of big bears that come to that bait is staggering. To the point where I was like, you know, I used to think, oh, I want to keep them as hungry as possible, so I just put one full barrel out and they empty out, and then when I get back, but the more feed you can keep there, the more they will come to that bait.
Yes,
they will stay.
The best Canadian, yes, outfitters say that.
Yeah,
and I'm
a firm believer. As much as possible,
I don't want my bears out roaming looking for other food.
Right.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have
give them a reason to stay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, especially
I still
in my
talk
area.
To guys, yeah, that are baiting small amounts of bait.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, a lot of times it's because they don't have access to a lot of bait. I mean, there's a lot of limiting factors in baiting. Like, some guys don't have access to the bait that,
yep,
we,
yeah,
do just because they don't. I mean, I don't know why they don't, but maybe they just don't have the time to look for it.
Yeah.
And it does can cost some money. But we're talking about best case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Like best practice. So we're not factoring in that, yeah, this is going to be a massive hustle that's going to take a ton of time and a ton of work. Like, that's guaranteed. But best case scenario, you feed them as much as possible.
As much as possible. You know, in my particular area, I've gotten to where I have lots of competition from other hunters in my area.
Mm-hmm.
And the more good quality bait and the more of it I can keep there to keep those bears coming to my bait, is key. I think it's key for having success, yeah, in, because it's tough.
And mentally, it probably keeps you a little less stressed.
Absolutely.
Knowing, hey, even though I've got competition, I feel like I'm doing something right here.
I go, yeah, above and beyond. I, right, put, it's a lot of work to do this. You, yeah, guys know.
Okay, it's tell me why it's, why, okay, I'll be the devil's advocate here. I want my bears to feel like there's competition at the bait. So my bears will eat all the food that I put out for them. I'm just going to put out like 10 gallons every time I go in every 2 days. Why is that bad?
Say if you've got 10 bears hitting this bait, it could potentially be wiped out in one evening, and then
yeah,
you've got, say, if you're only doing it once a week, there's 6 days of
them going somewhere else.
That's right.
Absolutely.
You'd be amazed at, you guys wouldn't, but people would be amazed at how many people have bought into this idea that lack of food creates competition. I have yet to find anybody that's been able to convince me that that's true, because all these outfitters, and nothing against outfitters, but I'll tell you, the best outfitters I've ever hunted with gave them as much as they could eat, or legally. Some places you legally can't bait. There's limits on how much you can bait.
Yeah,
some absolutely. Places. Here, it's not. We can put out as much as right. we want. But there's this idea that if you put out less, there's competition, because a bear is incentivized to come there earlier. And I always say, a bear can't reason. A bear doesn't know that. A bear just shows up after dark, and there's no bait there, and he goes, well, guess what? I'm not coming here again because there's no right. food here.
Yeah.
Right.
He's got to fill his belly up.
Right.
So if you can just pound him. And I've had lots of people say, just yesterday I talked to a guy that said, oh, man, you feed them too much, they'll get where they won't come in anymore. He thinks you can overfeed them.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I've found the opposite completely. I feel like if they go there and there's not feed there, they're going to someone else's bait. They're going down the ridge, going to eat acorns. Bears roam a long ways, a lot farther in a night and day's time than people realize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the more you can give them, the better. Plus, logistically, not everybody has time to run out and bait, throw 10 pounds of bait out every day.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, it's a lot of work. So if you put out
500 pounds of bait at one time, maybe you can go. I mean, depending upon how many bears are coming there. I have a lot of people that are like, well, tell me, how often should I go, and mm-hmm. how much should I put out? And I'm like, well, it matters how many bears you're feeding.
Right.
If you're feeding two bears, then maybe you don't have to go that much. Maybe you don't need to put out that much, because you don't want your bait to spoil.
Yeah.
You don't want your bait to get rained on and get moldy.
Absolutely.
And they're not going to eat it.
Absolutely.
So you have to regulate. If you're feeding eight bears and two of them are 500 pounders, mm-hmm. you better put out three full barrels, and you better come back after about 3 days.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean.
Absolutely.
Okay. Talk to me, Ryan, about like your starting sequence. So we can start 30 days before season. You'll put out bait when and how often, and just like walk me right to opening day.
Well, for me, you know, I'm sure it's different scenarios for different people. Say if you've got an established bait, you know, say it's Jason or yourself, that there's already bears living in the area, you know, there's bears visiting it before you even get there. So you could probably go in the first time and not bait it super heavy. I mean, but if you know they're there, why not? But for somebody that's finally going out for the first time, and going to try it and say, I want to see if there's something here, don't load that barrel.
Don't put out 500 pounds of bait.
Because more than likely, it's going to ruin or go stale or get rain on it and just go sloppy. For me, say my main bait down south, you know, I will fill three barrels plumb full, and a big pipe feeder probably hold 50, 60 pounds of corn. But, you know, and sling the grease with the additive to open up the bait.
And so you do that, and then when do you come back?
Well, that's something else. Now you've got the cell cameras. It will let you know when that bait is empty, you know.
Yeah.
You can tell by looking at the bait barrels in the pictures if they're empty or what's left on the ground. So that is a good tool versus having to go back and pull cards and see. So, you know, say if you know, I have run my own company, work for myself. If I say I baited on a Saturday and I see it's empty by Tuesday, I will take the time away from work to go down Tuesday to put bait in that.
Yep.
Some guys can't do that. They're punching the clock. So
yeah,
may just have to do it on a Saturday and go to the next Saturday.
You know? Yeah. But break it down even simpler. Well, let me say what I typically tell people is that put out bait 30 days before season.
Yeah.
Come back in 5 days and check it.
Mm-hmm.
Assess how much they ate. And I'm just trying to break it down real simple. Come back 5 days later. Assess what they ate. If they ate it to the ground and there's nothing left there, then put out more bait than you did and come back in 3 days.
Yep. And more than likely, there's going to be new bears picking up.
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
And basically, usually what I do is the closer I get to season, the more I come back.
Right.
And I get to where I'm coming back about every 3 days. Mm-hmm. But I'm putting out a lot of bait. Mm-hmm. You got to put out a lot of bait if you're feeding 10 bears for 3 days.
Yeah.
And the closer I get to opening day, I might get to where I'm coming in every 2 days. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that how would you do it, Jason?
Oh, same way. What I typically do is I go in there and I'll fill the bait as full as I can get it on the established bait. If it was a brand new bait, I might do half of a roller barrel and fill the main barrel up. And it, you know, because typically a bait that's not established, it's going to take till about midway through the month of baiting to really get a good number of bears on there. But the established bait, I fill it up max capacity. The way I run my baits is I'll start on a Saturday, the closest Saturday to the first day that I can bait.
Okay.
And then I will fill it up completely full, and I'll go back every Wednesday and every Saturday, like clockwork, until season's end.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how I do it.
Okay.
And that's just logistically wise. That gives me the most even type days I can get in a 7 week period or a 7 day period. And, you know, fill the bait up as full as possible. One thing I did want to touch on, I don't know if you guys have tried this, is on the fryer oil, I would throw it out everywhere, throw it up in trees and stuff. Well, sometimes, you know, it can get hard to get a hold of fryer oil. And what I started doing this last year is I've got a pump sprayer now.
Okay.
And the cleanest oil, or I can saint it out and screen it out. Mm-hmm. And I'll pump spray, and I can make a gallon or 2 gallon pump sprayer last several baitings, and it'll mist such a fine mist and coat everything so good. Okay. It really is efficient.
Yeah. Mm.
So I've started doing that too. I'll open that bait with full barrels of everything. I'll mist the Gold Rush fryer oil all over everything I can, even up as high as it'll spray, because that's your calling, you know. That's
how you're calling
to it. So
cool. That's a good tip. Mix it in. Have you done that before?
Not a sprayer.
Okay. I've heard that. Well, maybe it was you that told me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So the idea is that you just need to keep that bait full, depending on how many bears are coming in. A lot of guys are traveling.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, like here, are coming from the Delta, or they're coming from some place 2 or 3 hours away. So they're really trying to. They're like trying to pry information, like, well, how often do I have to go?
Yeah.
And so I try to break it down, and I, you know, just kind of give them a system. And so if somebody has questions, maybe they could just message us somehow if we've missed something. My third question was, what was my third question? What do you bait with? When do you bait?
Location.
Location. Let's talk about location. To me, location is probably the most important part of the equation, because not all bear sites are located are created equal. I mean, massively. You could be in a great bear county and have a location that was not very good.
Mm-hmm.
You could, people ask these kind of questions about. You know, well, I'm in such and such county. That's a good bear county. That means I got a good spot, right? And I'm like, well, it may. I mean, it's a good start.
Yeah.
But there's different locations that are going to be better. Describe to me, not where it's at, but just kind of like the features of some of your better baits. Like what's around them, what makes it good, or why do you think it's good?
Well, I'm going to tell a little story of how I got my first, the really good bait that I've ran for 15 years. Back in 2003, when I started baiting.
Did you have to shoot a guy to get it? Is this involved?
It was
like
very close.
Homicide?
It came very close to possibly me
getting shot. Because Ryan did. That's where Al Ryan got his good bait.
Yep. I'll have to hear this.
Right.
I'm just kidding.
You know, it can be hard to find locations to get permission on if you don't own property or know someone.
We can only bait on private land in Arkansas.
Right, correct. And so I just happened to be, I was just out looking for places I could bait. And I saw an old guy sitting on a porch out in the mountains, and stopped and talked to him. And he's like, you know, I saw a bear the other day. He's like, I don't think there's very many bears here, but you're welcome to try to bait. And he has 123 acres. It's a small place. It's split by a county dirt road, as a matter of fact. Mm. And at the time, I wasn't really thinking about strategic location, but this property taught me what to look for, because the amount of bears and big bears I have routinely, it just gave me the knowledge of knowing where to put it. So anyway, started baiting that year, and I mean, he's just like, well, there's probably not many bears here. The first year I had several large bears, and so I started bringing him photos, and he's, man, I can't believe all these bears that are here, and you know, you never see them. They're secretive animals. So the way, what it is you've got this big valley with the road run in the center, and then it runs up to two large ridges, and they're running north and south, both those ridges are. And it had been logged probably 20 years earlier. And so it is the thickest, steepest, brieriest stuff, blackberry brambles. I mean, you're crawling on hands and knees to get through it if you're walking and if you're trying to get off the hillsides. And it's steep and rough, and it runs down to a lot of creek bottoms with locusts, thorns, and a lot of saplings, just the thickest, darkest, nastiest stuff you can be in. Yep. And that's where those bears live. They like thick cover where they can be secretive and hide, that has lots of food. There's lots of hickories and acorns on this. It was all blackberries. So those bears live there. They were just and there.
It's close to National Forest.
It's surrounded by National Forest.
Okay.
So it's, you know, there's not a lot of pressure just directly around it.
Yeah.
And so, but these bears are living basically in this big bowl that is just plumb full of nasty briars and blackberries, and it's steep and nasty getting down to it. And so I try to set up my bait when I'm looking. I want to be able to place that bait where the prevailing wind will carry the lure and the scent to where the bears are.
Yep.
And generally, there's probably bears all around that particular bait, but the majority of them almost always come from the northwest to that bait. And that's down in that nasty bottom. That's where they live. And so I try to set it up. And it can be really – I have a lot of trouble with the wind, the swirling winds. It's really, really difficult there. But
get a redneck blind.
I hunted out of a redneck ghillie blind last year, and it helped quite a bit.
Did it?
It did. And now that
– get a real one.
I know.
You'll kill every bear in the woods.
It's on the agenda. But, yeah, the prevailing winds is – Yep. You know, predominantly here we have southwest winds.
Yeah.
You know, and what's tough the last few years is we've been getting a lot of easterly winds about the time season
early
opens.
Early season, it's kind of been weird.
It's been bumping. It's like the fall is coming a little sooner now, according to when our hunt actually begins.
Yeah. Mm.
But
well, that's a good description of where it's at. And I think the key thing, at least for here, is close to National Forest. And that In other parts of the world, that may translate just into it's in bear territory, and these bears want to be in
remote
rugged,
country.
Remote, unfragmented wilderness is a phrase that we use a lot, which technically wouldn't be
no human intrusion, you know, four-wheeler trails.
Right.
Our bears aren't in ag country. There's parts of the world or the continent where they are that, you know, bears are feeding in places where there's are human activity, but here we're not. But and so we're trying to get into the most remote places that we can, and then like on a 120 acre farm, like you're trying to find a bait site that you can drive a truck to.
Yep,
I would imagine.
Yeah, on an old logging road or an ATV. Yep.
But you're also trying to get as far. I bet you're trying to get as far away from the county road as you can.
Absolutely.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Because that bear's not going to want to come up within 75 yards of a main county road with people coming up and down on open day of season.
Yep.
I mean, you're probably trying to get as far away from that as you
quarter
can.
Quarter mile minimum if possible. You know, I like to be in there. And that's straight up the mountain on the very top of the ridge, because that then, way you can carry that scent
would
out
you
there.
And you'd rather be up higher than lower?
I prefer to be as high as possible just for more stable winds.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's a key that I think.
Yeah.
I mean, down low, unless you've got a redneck blind where you can have 100% and redneck blind doesn't pay me a dime, they should.
Yeah.
And
good scent containment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could put a bear bait wherever you wanted. But because you said the bears are living down low, but you're hunting up high.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. Because
absolutely. I've watched them just I put my stand as close to the break of the hill as I can because it drops off so steep that keeps my scent traveling way up above, up high. Yeah. And I mean, most every bear that has come to that bait or that I've taken at that bait have come up from that bottom.
I think a high bait, too, is better for scent distribution.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Because, see, you're not hunting there 24 hours a day. Because if you think about scent distribution, it's also distributing your human scent. But think about the thermals coming and going off the top of a mountain.
Yep.
You know, in the evening time at night, that scent is going down in that valley. Mm-hmm. And then in the morning time, it's going up, and the winds are carrying it to who knows where, long ways away.
Right.
One thing that Jason said that I'll bring up is that it's best to place a bait in a place where the prevailing winds are going to be blowing the wind towards where bears are. That statement works in some places. And the example that I had was one time I had a piece of private land that was like on the border of big national forest. So on, you know, to the, let's just say to the north of this property was all civilization. I mean, it was cattle farms and roads, and behind it was big national forest. Well, there was a ton of bear in the big national forest, but the prevailing wind was blowing my bait scent into civilization, and I could hardly ever get bears to come in there, even though it was right on the lip of this huge, nasty canyon that I would look down in, and I mean, there was like big national forest, and I was like, there are bears within a half mile of here.
Yep.
That don't even know this bait's here because, you know, and I was waiting for a north wind, which never came. You know, I baited that spot for 5 years and never could draw bears there, and I should have been able to. And if that bait had been on the other side of that national forest where a southerly wind or southwestern wind would have been blowing into that, I think I'd have drawn every bear out of there.
Absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So describe your good bait, Ryan, or what you look for in a good bait.
Well, you know, I just looked into the place I'm at. Oh, gosh, it's been early 2000s, and it just happened. It's pretty much landlocked in the middle of national forest, but it has a valley on the back end. It's just got old beaver sloughs. It's thick, you know, briars, persimmons, you know, all kinds of brambles, but just a dark, dank area where bears love to live, bed, you know, especially during the summer, late summer. But anyway, there's just bears there year round. So I actually didn't realize how good of a hot spot it was right off the bat. And after the first year or two, and, you know, I had some buddies that baited on the other side of that, and they were killing monster bears too. But it just, you know, I call it the Valley of the Kings. You know, because it just it's got monster bears in it. You know, Beeson's have killed 3 or 4
500 plus pounds.
Yeah, out of there, and I've taken, you know, 500 and I don't know how many fours out of it. So
yeah,
but you know, it ain't nothing on a good year to have, you know, a dozen to 18 bears on this one bait, but. Yeah. You know, I just try to get as close as I can to the national forest. Just happened to find a location that was suitable for a stand and where I felt like the bears, you know, would want to travel, not have to think twice, you know, feel comfortable coming into it. But, you know, it's just like Jason said, you know, it's the seasons are changing. You're going to have south winds, north winds. It's, it's just, but, you know, more or less on a west wind for me is going to take that scent into where the bears are living. But I've also got food plots on this property up on the top that I plant lots and lots of buck forage oats. So all these acres of oats go to seed, and all summer long these bears are living there eating seed tops off this. So usually when I go into bait, they're there just pretty lickety-split.
Yeah.
You know, it's got no human intrusion, no roads close. But, you know, it's hard for the average Joe to find, you know, a piece of ground like that. We all know that. So, you know, guy might find a Deltic lease that's 80 or 100 acres that's pure pine timber. And you know how hard it is for bears to stay in pine timber a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has to have – you know, some big hardwoods, close water, crevices, shade, you know, just nasty tangles.
Yeah, you hear a lot of people talk about water. Like, you know, if you're going to have a good bait, water's got to be close. That's true. If bears are eating that much food, they've got to be drinking a ton of water. But I don't find water to be the – this is the one thing I don't understand about that argument. Because any bear baiting article you're ever going to read, they're going to say water is a must. And, I mean, they make it sound like there's got to be water within 100 yards of your bait.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great if there's water within 100 yards of your bait. But I don't find that to be necessarily true because water's not the limiting factor.
Well, most people think, well, it's got a pond on it. Well, that'll work. Well, bears really don't utilize ponds that much. It's got to be a seep, you know, seepage.
Smaller.
Right, yeah, and you might not know it's there, you know.
Yep.
And,
right.
And animals will use that.
Around here, there's water in a whole lot more places than you would realize.
Yeah.
Now, this, what you're saying, though, I mean, bears do... They will use a pond as a water source, 100%. And now I had last podcast, James Brandenburg was on here, and he asked me what kind of water sources bears are looking for. And I told him, I said, I don't think a bear cares whether he's drinking out of a mud hole. I remember one time when I was hunting with my grandpa, bird hunting quail dogs, and I watched a bird dog run up to a water hole and drink just the muddiest, nastiest water. And I said, does that dog not mind drinking muddy water? And he said he could care less.
Yeah.
He's just thirsty. Yep. I mean, now they, but I think they probably find themselves utilizing more of the smaller water sources and more secluded places. But
yeah,
point being, water's good, but there's it, or at least around here, water's not a limiting resource.
Yeah,
right.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Okay. As we're closing down here, what would you say to somebody that was? And even take it out of Arkansas, because around here, you know, the limiting factor is finding private land that you can hunt.
Right.
And we ain't giving nobody any tips about how to do that. That's a joke. It sort of. No, it's just the same way you'd find private land for deer hunting.
Yep.
I mean, get out and knock on doors, use your apps. I mean, these new apps are almost cheating for finding landowners.
Yeah.
And if you want to find a place to bait bear, you can find it. Yeah. It's hard. I mean, they're all, I mean, like there's, we've been doing this now in this part of the world for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, like a lot of the good spots are taken, but there's good spots still out there that just are waiting for the right relationship to be built.
Yep.
And there's leases and different things that people can get on. So, I'm joking about that, about not telling people how to find private land. But let's say they're in Idaho, and you can bait on public land there.
Right, yeah.
Like, give me, like, a 1 minute. Like, what would you do to start a brand-new bait? 1 minute, Jason. And I'm going to ask you the same thing.
I would look for...
Not necessarily location.
Okay,
like
okay.
Bait, like, just say...
If I just want to slam a bait in real quick.
Just like, what would you put out? You know, I'd take a 55-gallon drum and
season's know, open. I can hunt as soon as.
Yeah, what would you do?
Pastries, bacon ends, dog food, and maple syrup and fryer oil.
And you'd put it in a 55-gallon drum.
Put it in a 55-gallon
drum. You'd put up a trail camera.
I'd put up a trail camera.
Would you put up your tree stand before a bear got there?
Absolutely. I'd go ahead and just make that bait site hunt ready. Maybe even
how far would you put your stand from the bait?
20 yards max, probably 15 to 20 yards. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Or as close as I could get to that particular bait and still have a good wind for what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you do, Ryan?
Same scenario. I mean, like you say, you want to open it up, some food, you know, pastries, dog food, corn, but definitely the fryer grease additive, something to get the bait started, use the air to your advantage to do that. But like I say, go ahead and put that stand up and have that location turnkey for not have to tinker around anymore.
You know, this is kind of going backwards, but let's talk real quick about starting a bait, because that's a critical component is getting bears to your bait. And I'll give one. Think of a tip for starting a bait. You get one tip. Okay, I'll give mine first. Tip for starting a bait is to do a drag. I once had a bait that I put out that was in a good spot, and I'd actually baited it before and had a couple bears come in there the year before. Put out a bait, expected bears to be right on it, but they didn't show up. A week later, I went back, and nothing had touched it. And it, this bait was down low. It's the only place I could hunt on this place was down low, which I didn't want to be down low because low is bad for scent distribution.
Yep.
And that's exactly what I found.
Yeah.
Bait was low, no bears. And so I came to the bait, and I wasn't prepared for this, but I had oil, and I cut the back of my shirt off about a 14-inch strip, about 4 inches tall, and had a piece of rope, and I dipped that piece of the shirt into my Northwoods, my Gold Rush oil, took a bottle of the Gold Rush, you know, I like poured the oil into like a 20-ounce Pepsi bottle or something, you know, and I just took off down the creek, walking, just dragging that scent drag down the creek, and I drug it all the way till this valley opened up and where two other valleys met, and I made a big loop, and I probably went a half a mile one direction, but I got the scent out of that valley.
Yeah,
and then I poured the scent out, you know, slung the oil around, and then I came back. So I left this big drag. Within a day, there were bears there.
Absolutely.
So there's my tip for starting a bait is grease, but you could do a drag tip.
I mean, you're basically covering point A. I mean, it's all about scent dispersal. Yep. That has to happen. So, I mean, like you say, you know, I had a buddy a couple years ago said, hey, I'm in a prime spot over here in Oklahoma, and I've had it for 2 weeks and nothing. I said, get you some Gold Rush and just walk out all the private parts that you can, just like you said, with the rag or sling it here and there. And within 3 days, he had multiple bears on the bait.
So get out away from your bait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I think scent, a bait site can kind of, depending on where it's at, and you may be limited on where you can put it. So you may not be able to put it on top of a mountain.
Right,
you may have to put it down low or something. And it kind of holds in until there's a weather change. Sometimes a weather change will bring in bears. I remember a real good bear hunter down where I'm from. He always said, man, I'm waiting for a north wind. He said, as soon as I get a north wind, half of my baits will just turn on. I mean, but that's about scent distribution.
Yeah.
But you can cheat that. You can cheat that with a drag.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because you can take your scent to another place.
I want to come back and say another.
We'll do it. Go ahead now. You're going to take Jason's.
Yeah, if you're going to open up new place and you do have bears coming in, don't go in and put together a ladder stand, you know.
Not there at the location.
No, I mean, if you feel like that there's a good chance there's going to be bears there, go ahead and have your setup ready.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Don't come back in there and tinker around setting up stands, screwing tree steps, doing this, and this. That's the most unnatural thing you could do.
Right. Yeah. Low pressure.
That's right.
Low pressure.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about one more thing after this, and that'll be hunting strategy. But what's your tip for starting a bait?
You know, I'm going to preach to the choir. Same thing. The scent, the fryer oil is key, I think. I don't think you can have a successful bait, period, if you don't have the call lure there.
Have you ever done a burn?
I have done like a bacon burn, honey burn, stuff like that.
You think it did much?
You know, it probably did, but it's just a lot of hassle. Yeah. It's something I don't like to hassle with. It's just like he was talking about with the, Ryan was talking about with the stands. I don't want to go in there 10 days before season after bears been coming and spend 2 hours there assembling stand, trying to figure out what tree to put in. I want it all figured out. Here's a tip. When you put your bait out, when you're picking a location, make sure that you can get everything done initially that you want done to be ready to hunt.
So all you got to do is go back in there and bait.
Yes, and I know that there's times where, like last year, last minute I had to throw the redneck gilly blind in there because the wind was, it was terrible east wind, and I had to do something to be able to hunt because my stand wouldn't work. I was out of options at the point. So it
but
worked.
It worked.
It worked.
You killed a good bear last year, didn't you?
It worked. Yep. Candace did, we had that bad cold front come in and all that rain. It just kind of shut the bait down. But, yeah, she took a nice 280-pound sow.
You took a pretty good one the year before, though.
Oh, yeah. Very, 400-pounder.
Yeah. Color face.
Nice chocolate bear. Yep.
Yeah.
19 and 4/16.
Yeah.
Nice bear.
Real quick, let's talk about hunt strategy, and I'll tell mine first. The way that I handle a bait is I want that bait to be a safe place for that bear, mm-hmm. and I want to be predictable. Mm-hmm. If you are predictable, the bears will be predictable.
That's right.
I will. Now, this is best case scenario, and you guys may do different stuff than this, but I don't ever go into a bait in the evening time, like during peak feeding hours. Yep. Like I would rather let a bait go dry than drive into a bait at 7 o'clock at night and bump bears off of it. That's just the way I do it. And so I want to. If I'm predictable, the bears are predictable.
Yeah.
If the bears are always thinking, is that guy? The bears know that there's a human coming in here. We drive our trucks right up to the bait. We leave our scent.
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. they know. Even big bears. You know, last year I killed a 550-pound bear in Oklahoma.
Right.
He absolutely knew I was there. He was out there listening to me. You know, when I was unloading my truck. I mean, I don't think he was 80 yards out there, but I mean, you know, he was probably across the valley over on the ridge.
Very aware.
He knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I wanted him to trust me like clockwork. Mm-hmm. And if I broke that trust, then his trust breaks. And all of a sudden, he is wary. So I want him to feel totally comfortable coming in there in the evening, in the daytime, and not be afraid that I'm going to drive in or I'm going to sneak in or I'm going to slip in. What I like to do, and I think this has been key for my success over bait, has been, because a lot of people ask, what do you do on the day you hunt? Because a lot of guys bait on the day they hunt, like drive into the bait mm-hmm. and then leave a hunter and then go out.
Yep.
Keep it. That's not a bad thing. I wouldn't say it's best practice, though. To me, best practice, what I've seen is two things. I find that the day after you bait is when a lot of those big bears come in the
yep.
daytime.
Yep.
If I'm in there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon putting out bait,
they show up after dark.
A lot of times the big ones show up after dark. Now, I'm not talking about 200-pound bears. He may be licking the barrel while you're still in sight driving away.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the big ones. I find that the day after you bait is when they are happy as can be because there's a mm-hmm. ton of good bait, a lot yep. of variety,
yep.
and you've been gone for a long time. So I bait the day before season, and the day of season I slip in like a ninja, and I don't want them to think I'm there.
That's exactly how I do it.
Yep.
You know, some of these guys want to get in on the bait before daylight. Not yep. me. I ain't.
It's tough.
Yeah, I don't. You don't want to go in
there. You only hunt evenings. That's probably the biggest thing that people. I want you to finish yours.
To go walking in with a flashlight, knowing there's bears in the area is one of the most unnatural things you could do.
Right.
If you're going to hunt the mornings, why not wait till daylight, ease down to it? And mm-hmm. if there was a shooter bear on the bait, I mean,
you could potentially get a shot.
You could potentially get a shot, or you could just back off. But, you know, and slip in the stand quiet. But, you know, and you hunt the evening or the afternoon, you know, according to what your cameras are telling you, when I get out of the tree, I shimmy down quiet. I do not turn on a flashlight till I'm a long ways from the bait. People say, well, that's unnerving. Maybe a little bit. But, you know, if you've done it for a while, you know how it is.
These bears haven't eaten yet.
Yeah. You know, so.
That's scary, Ryan.
I knew you felt that way.
No, what you just said, I talked to a guy this week, Lee Walt. I'm going to have Lee listen to this. He'll do it. He got a spot up here that he can bait, and he was just like, what do I do? And I gave him a spiel about what to do, and he said, should we hunt mornings? Because he's hunted with me before, and we only hunted we hunted mornings. He knows I don't like hunting mornings. Mm-hmm. And I said, it all matters what your goals are. I said, if you've got a 500-pound bear coming in there every evening, don't hunt the morning.
Yeah.
Because you're going to bump him. Because if the thing about this trust thing is that if there's a human slipping in there on opening day at an unnatural time and you inadvertently bump that 500-pound bear, you've broke that trust big time. Oh, even worse than driving in on him.
And more than likely, it's not a mature bear's first rodeo, you know.
Yeah.
In these parts, because they visit lots of different bait sites. Yeah, and
right. So I told him, I said, if you just want to kill a bear, you could probably kill one in the morning. Just slip in after daylight with a good wind if you can, and you know, crawl up a tree and probably kill one. But I said, if you had a 500-pounder coming in there, don't even hunt. Just sleep in and get in there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when no bears are there for sure, and you can get in clean. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Jason?
You know, I've got mixed feelings a little bit.
That's good. Tell me how you've hunted the mornings.
This is my experience on the Old Faithful bait is I drive right to the bait, and I'm only able to bait Saturdays and Wednesdays. Well, on Wednesdays, I'm driving a long ways from work. So I roll in there probably 10 o'clock on Saturdays, midday, and I'll put out a lot of bait. And like you guys said, the day after a baiting is usually the hot day. Mm-hmm. That's usually when most of the bears are going to pound the bait because there's fresh bait there. A lot of times they've been out for a day, and they're coming to check, and they've fresh scent in there. But in the evening, I'm not getting there till 6 or 6:30 in the afternoon. That's prime time.
I'm glad you said that because I don't want to create a doctrine. I know there's other ways to do it than the way. And Ryan and I have talked so much, and I've learned a ton from Ryan. We kind of have this ideal doctrine of baiting bears.
Sure.
That's part of the reason I wanted you to come because I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, you're having to work and then go bait after work.
Yeah.
So you're getting in there at 6 o'clock.
I'm driving up there at 6 o'clock, bumping a giant bear off the bait, and leaving, and on the camera 45 minutes later, there's either that bear back or another giant. I mean, it's just,
it's working for you.
It works for me. I would prefer, I'm the same way as you guys, before the day of the opening of the season, I want to have it baited up the day before, though. I mean, that's what I prefer. I don't want to go in there and bait it that day and then go hunt it. I want to be in there. If it opens on a Saturday, I'm going Friday. I'm loading the heck out of it Friday evening. Some of those bears will come at night, but the majority of them are going to come during the day or that next day because that's when it's prime and all the fresh scent's gotten out there. And, you know, I used to hunt mornings quite a bit, and I killed two of my biggest bears in the morning.
Did you really?
My very first bear right after daylight. Drove the truck up there. We got out, got in the stands. My buddy drove it down, and at daylight I killed a 19.5-inch 400-pounder. It was the first bear I ever killed.
Wow.
Yeah, giant. And but I will tell another story is I had a friend drop me off at that bait at 5:45 in the morning because I wanted to get in there early because a lot of times a lot of my bears are hitting my bait in the morning time.
Okay.
And, you know, just like 7 o'clock, 8:30 to 10 right in there. I get a lot of all-day action.
Hmm.
But,
and it could have to do with where your bait's at.
Right.
Somebody else may not be getting that.
Right. It's a good location, and they're there, and they're just visiting it all day, and there's multiple bears there. I had a friend drop me off at 5:45 in the morning. I had my little LED headlight on my head, and as he's driving the ATV off, I'm in the stand, and I can still see his headlights going off the hill, and I turn, and my light hits that bait site, and there is a giant standing in the bait.
Wow.
Literally 10 minutes after he dropped me off. And I had to sit there with that bear in the bait until it got daylight, and he left before it was shooting light.
Wow.
At that point, I was like, you know, I feel like I
what
probably
did that
shouldn't.
Bear do after that? Because, see,
he came right in, stood there for a few minutes.
Well, I mean, like, were you able to kill that bear?
No, he left. I was down to There was a hill. There's a big hill to my east, and the sun was coming up. It stays really dark, even on top of that mountain.
I guess my question is more: what did he do after that? Like in terms of, did he keep coming in the daytime? Because I mean, what you just described is what we're saying don't do.
You know, I don't know because I ended up killing a nice chocolate bear that evening. I sat there for 13 hours. Never got out of that stand.
Okay. So, well, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
I don't know if he returned and I pulled the camera that evening.
Okay.
So.
You know, everybody has their trial and error and their certain ways to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, his bait site, the bears are going to act different than mine. You know, when I baited up in this area, you know, these bears were totally different to the way they acted down in the South Zone.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It was strange, but
a guy's got to find a way to have success and just stick with a plan. And I think that's what we've all done is you just got to stick with a plan and you got to work hard and you got to think it through and you just got to think about these things. If nothing else, this is going to get people thinking. And everybody's working with a different scenario. Like, you're working with a deal where you don't, you know, Ryan and I work for ourselves so we can do kind of what we want. Right. And that's a big factor. But most people are having to, you know, might have to go in the evening time. Well, if you go in the evening time, be consistent, you know. And anyway, there's a lot of variables. And ultimately, I think what I'd like to say is that it's harder than most people think to kill a bear over bait, especially a big one. I mean, you got to do a lot of things right to kill a big bear over bait.
Yeah.
And you've, you know, like here in Arkansas, I've actually never killed a big bear over bait in Arkansas.
It's really tough.
And part of that's not, that's kind of cheat, not totally fair. It doesn't tell the whole story. I mean, I've baited all these years and I've helped a lot of people kill bears. A lot of times my kids are the priority of what I'm trying to do. And then I've focused my other attention. And now in Oklahoma I have, and it's a different story. It's just a different story. I got better places over there than I do here.
Right.
And anyway, I say that to say it's not easy. We're talking like it's just easy. My places in Arkansas have gotten worse, actually, over the last 5 years.
Is that right?
Yeah. We just, 5 years ago, when there was a time when I wasn't guiding, but we were auctioning a hunt off for the association.
Yeah.
We put people on big bears for several years in a row that they should have killed big ones on opening day, and they didn't. But I just say it's hard. That's what I say. I mean, some people don't understand, and I think I'll do a preamble intro to this where I'm going to talk about the fair chase aspects of baiting, hunting over bait, because it's a ton of work. It's, you know, the dream is free, the hustle is sold separately, as they say.
That's right.
Yep. Well, closing thoughts, going once.
If you're going to hunt bear, mature bears, it's like a marriage. You got to have the desire and the effort, you know, and that combined, you'll be more successful. So a lot of sweat equity involved with baiting bears hardcore.
Absolutely. Yep. Don't get out there and get good locations, get good bait.
That's the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Put the work in. You want good results, you got to put in the work. Otherwise, you know, you can't just take shortcuts. Got to put full effort.
Yep.
Full effort.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.